The vibration of change, that magical place where life shifts from struggle to ease, from stagnation to forward movement, from old ways of being to new ways of becoming. Yes, it can seem rather elusive to get there, but when you are in it, you feel it down to your very core, and it can positively affect everything in your life, from your relationships to your health and well-being, from your career path to your abundance, from the quality of your inner connection to the fullness of your self-expression. Here on the Christine Upchurch Show, we explore ways to get into that vibration of change with experts in the fields of consciousness, psychology, spirituality, health, healing, and science. Are you ready to step into your vibration of change? Hello, everybody. Welcome and Happy New Year. Thank you so much for joining us here today. You might be listening live on 1150 AM KKNW in the Seattle area, on TransformationTalkRadio.com from around the world, or of course on Facebook Live on my professional page. Wherever you're watching from and whenever, if you're listening and or watching after the fact on one of the various podcasts it sends up or on my YouTube channel, please subscribe to my YouTube channel. Welcome. We are going to be talking about an incredibly important topic today, one that every single person on the planet should be concerned about. But before I share information about that and welcome our guest, I would like to say Happy New Year to the people behind the technology. Happy New Year, Benny.
Hey, Happy New Year. Woo! Going on 2 weeks, still partying. No, I'm just kidding. It's been a long year already.
Oh, I know. I saw a funny meme that said, 2022 sounds like then 2020 and then T-O-O.
Like, right.
Please no.
I've
please
seen
no.
That. That's a good one, though. Very clever.
Yeah.
But Happy New Year to you and the fam.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And Happy New Year to you, Eric.
Happy New Year. How's it going?
It's going well. It's
can't
going
quite
well.
Match Benny's energy, but I'm here too.
Now, I can't match his energy either, Eric. So it's just, it is what it is. And we really want to step into the best of who we are. And Benny is a unique person.
Aw, so, I take that with a huge heart. Yay. Woo.
Yeah.
Get some.
Yeah. You know, one of the things I've become more and more aware of over the years, particularly the last couple of years, is human trafficking. I've got a dear friend who assists victims who have been trafficked or in abusive relationships. And I've also learned that it's a much bigger problem than I've ever been led to believe. And for a long time, I watched a lot of mainstream media. That's the way I got my news. And yes, there's information there. But really, one of the things I've learned over the last couple of years is you really have to dive deeper. You have to go into more of some of the alternative media. And there's a whole lot more information out there about a whole lot of things, including human trafficking. If you have the interest and the willingness to sort of go outside of the mainstream and learn more. And I'm so grateful for our guest here today, Jan Edwards. She spent more than 25 years as an executive in sales and marketing. And she worked with organizations such as Time Warner, Bright House, United Nations, and other organizations. She was invited to go on a mission to Ethiopia. And she had an interesting experience there, and I'm going to let her tell you about that. And it opened her eyes to human trafficking, and particularly child trafficking. And it inspired her, and I'm going to let her tell you a little bit more about that, to focus on a new mission. And she's been featured in Huffington Post, Marie Claire in the UK, NBC, iHeartRadio, and here on the Christine Upchurch Show now as well. And she has got a video that's coming up as well. We're going to talk more about that. But I'd like to welcome our guest today, Jan Edwards. Hi, Jan. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, Christine. Thank you so much for inviting me to be on your show and for, you know, the opportunity to share with your listeners and viewers on Facebook Live about this really important topic, and most importantly, what we can do to help prevent it.
Yeah, and you know, once upon a time, I thought, okay, so there are a few children who are kidnapped. You know, that happens, and
child trafficking is somewhere else in general. And with the Epstein Island stuff that's come out, and only a little bit of that information's come out, Ghislaine Maxwell and that whole thing, I think we've begun to open our eyes to the fact that there's a lot more human trafficking and child trafficking, pedophilia in particular, that is widespread. And it's not just elsewhere, is it?
No, it's not. It's right here in our neighborhood. And I did a little quick search before I hopped on here. And there's a great organization in Seattle called the Genesis Project. And since they've been opened, they've assisted over 421 women, and they've had all of their years together. That was in 21 and 22. Together, they had drop-in visits of over 3,600. So this is something that is pervasive. It is everywhere, and it's not kidnapping. That does happen, but it's 1 to 2%. And the movie Taken has actually done more damage to what people's perception of this is than really anything that's happened, because that's, again, that this teeny tiny percent. And given the environment in the past 2 years, our kids don't even have to leave the house to be exploited. Predators use this thing right here to entice our children to do things they would never normally choose to do.
Right. I'm always curious about my guest's sort of origin story, because clearly you had a very successful career and you've chosen a different direction. You've got a passion for helping alleviate this situation. What transpired to inspire you?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I think I'm one of a handful of people in this realm that's not a survivor. Not a victim of human trafficking. And I didn't experience domestic violence either. I had a great upbringing, you know, being a child of the 60s and 70s, you know, our parents did the best they could, you know, but I had a great life. I was at the UN in a meeting, and we've all gone to conferences where you see someone or you meet someone, you're like, I got to continue the conversation with that person. Well, I met Dr. Mahari. He lives in Tennessee, and he's also from Ethiopia. And we connected at the UN conference. We texted, we emailed, and you know, I was really looking forward to learning more about his organization and what they were doing. And he said, you know, Jan, I'm going to have to get back to you in, you know, 6 to 8 weeks because we're getting ready to go to Ethiopia next month. And I'm like, oh, have a great time. Take pictures. Let me know when you get back. He sends me an email right back and says, do you want to go? Well, it's not every day you get invited to go to Ethiopia. And so I did the math and did some looking and had conversations with people, and I went. And if anyone that's listening or watching has ever been on a mission trip, you know, at the end of the day, you are tapped out. You're giving your heart, your soul, everything to the people that you're serving for 12, 14 days, hours a day. When you get done at the end of the day, all you want to do is eat, take a shower, and go to bed. That's all you want to do. So we're sitting in our little van, you know, coming back from our mission trip, and I'm looking out the window, and it was just a moment in time. I was in Addis Ababa, which is the capital. It has 2 stoplights, so you can imagine what traffic's like. And we had just started moving, and I looked over, and there were 2 older men and 2 younger girls, you know, clearly teenish, you know, early teens. And right. I just didn't feel right. And when I say that, you know, I talk to people about that thing right here, right in your solar plexus, you know, when stuff's off. And it just didn't feel right. When I got back to my sponsor's house, both he and his wife are physicians there in Ethiopia. Well, now they live here in Washington. I shared with him what I saw. And he goes, oh, yeah, it's human trafficking. And now you got to get this, is 2013. Okay. Right. So it's a little while ago. So this is before R. Kelly. This is before Epstein. This is before Maxwell. This is before even the Me Too movement. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I'm staring at him. I said, what are you talking about? He said, Jan, we have 4.5 million orphans in Ethiopia. We're the number one source of human trafficking into the Middle East. And you got to get how your face is looking. That was me. And my brain was whirling around going, I didn't get it. Like, you got to really, my brain was really struggling. And I said, hang on a second. I said, are you telling me people are selling people. Like, I thought we left that a couple hundred years ago. And he looked at me and he said, Jan, where you been? I'm like, well, Orlando, happiest place on earth. Yeah. We don't really talk about things like that. I'm in the Sunshine State, you know, and he said, this is a $150 billion industry, Jan.
$150 billion.
That was then. The latest stat I read, and I'm going to get to stats in a minute, but the latest stat I read for some fairly reliable sources, so over 400 million. 400 billion, sorry, 400 billion.
Billion.
Yeah, so it was 150 billion. Billion 9 years ago. Now it's in the 400 billion range. It's the fastest growing illegal crime in the world behind drugs. It goes drugs, people, guns. We surpassed guns. Now, here's the thing. The drug, you know, human thing. I sell you a drug. You buy it once. You got to come back to me. So this is a continual transaction. Sure. And quite frankly, it's traceable because I got a thing, right? There's this thing called the drug that's being sold. I can sell a human being over and over and over and over again.
Wow.
And that's why a lot of gangs got into that business, because it's, yes, it's as transactional, very similar to drugs. However, I can suppress, I can coerce, I can manipulate. And by the way, I can drug a human being into submission and, you know, mentally do battle with them. So they actually think this is their choice, get them hooked on drugs, and now I control them. Or I threaten them. That's the other thing too, you know. So and I would assert the growth has been exponential over the past 2 years, given the environment. In fact, NCMEC, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, reported a 98% increase of online enticement from 2019 to the end of 2020. From 2020 to 2021, it's 28% increase. I'm not a statistician, so I can't tell you the year-to-year growth, but it's a lot because our kids have been sequestered at home. Parents are challenged dealing with everything they're dealing with out in the world. Kids don't want to add this other problem, right? And I put quotes, problem, to their parents because they can feel the energy of what their parents are dealing with. You put on top of that the energy that's out in the world right now. Where am I going to go? Right here. Yeah. It's trusted and always with me, and I'm not quote judged, right? If I find a friend online and I can kibitch with them, you know, we're going to kibitch together.
Yeah. And kids have had more access to the internet because so many of them were being taught over the internet. So, you know, parents aren't going to pay close attention because they're on the computer. It's just, it's a part of their long day on the computer.
Well, and, you know, especially in 2020, parents might have been in the same room as their kids, but their computers were back to back, right? So my kid was over across from me. I don't know what they're doing. Yeah. And one of the things we got, because I interview people from all over the world for our parent tech talk, and I was interviewing the president of the Florida Association of Legal Investigators, Rick Root, and he said, one little tip will make a difference. Work side by side. So you're side by side with your kid as opposed to back to back. Then you can actually see what they're doing. And if they're doing something they shouldn't be doing, you'll at least have an inkling of it out of the corner of your eye so you can address it in that moment. And I think that's the biggest challenge right now that our parents are having and our kids are having. One, this is an uncomfortable topic. People don't like to talk about sex, let alone harm to a child. You put those two together, it's a visceral, you know, push away reaction. I get it. We can't be with horrible things. And children,
and yet we have to be in order to change it. Not only in terms of, you know, going after the perpetrators and rescuing the kids and the women and the men who are a part of the the, you know, the victimhood of human trafficking, but also in order to look at the higher level picture of what it is about society that is making this thrive, that needs to be fixed in order to alleviate the problem long-term.
Yeah, well, it's really interesting you said that. I was on a podcast the other night, and I was on with one of our local law enforcement officers who works in this realm all the time. And then Tomas Lars from United Abolitionists, and he does the back end work. He does triage for all the calls we get from the hotline here in the state of Florida. So he works directly with, you know, recovered survivors and victims. And, you know, I think there's three core things that we're challenged with. One of them being poverty. When people are inside poverty and someone offers you $10 to take a picture of your feet and they'll cash app you that 10 bucks. If I'm a teenager and everybody else is purchasing really cool things and I don't have access to that money because my mom's working three jobs and you just want a picture of my feet. Okay. Mm-hmm. Right. And that that's the moment those predators have those kids. Because then it's well, $15 for your shins and, you know, like that. And for that child, it's going to do one of two things. A, I get to go now, go buy something that I really want that I haven't been able to ever buy because I've never had my own money. Or two, that money is going to help feed my family.
Right.
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 And so, you know, so you've got the, as you know, the prefrontal cortex of children isn't fully developed of any human until you're in your mid to late 20s, early 30s.
Sure.
So you've got middle-aged predators interacting with teenagers online an unfettered environment. Who's going to win that game?
Yeah. And the prefrontal cortex relates to understanding the natural consequences of choices, actions, words. And so that's why you see, you know, teenagers driving crazily. They think that they can't die. They don't understand the natural consequences. Oh boy, I could be permanently paralyzed or kill somebody or die. It's just, they can't process it the same way.
Decision-making. And, you know, it's interesting because we, you know, we've educated over 16,000 young people across the country the past 5 years. And when I say your prefrontal cortex, I, you know, they all stare at me like, you know, blank screen. I said, that's your decision-making space of your brain. I said, how many of you have fallen deep, 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 deep in love with somebody and then you hate them 2 days later? They all raise their hands. I'm like, that's your prefrontal cortex at work, right? You got the hormones rage and you're like, oh, I love them. And then they say or do something that, and then you're maybe just like, nope, they're out. And they're like, oh, you know, so they start to grasp that and it's not, they don't have full control of it. And that's the key. But once they learn, that's the beauty and why I love, like, you got to get me wrong. I love talking to parents too. They're wonderful. But my heart, they're with the kids. Because when we have this kind of straightforward dialogue with them, first of all, they love it. They dig it, this no dancing around stuff. We just cut right to the core. Second, they're so grateful that someone came in and had the guts to have this dialogue with them. And lastly, they get it because they're all online. They all get bombarded with these unwanted messages and DMs and pictures.
Sure.
And they're over here thinking it's their fault. And when I share with them, you know, our team shares with them, no, you've got predators sending out DMs, 300, 400, 500 DMs every single day, seeing who will bite.
Right.
It's like you see this wave of relief wash over them because they get it's not their fault.
Yeah,
I said, if you've done this, you've been intentionally manipulated and coerced to do something that if you really fully grasp what was happening, you wouldn't do it. And now you, and now they get the whole picture and they're like, I had 10 kids delete Snapchat off their phones in front of me after MARC training.
That's great. So when you talked about taking a photo of, you know, their feet, that brings up this notion of grooming. Can you share with our listeners and viewers a little bit about the process of luring somebody in?
Yes. Yeah. And it's, and because of the current state, you know, it used to take weeks, months to groom and recruit a child to do something. Now it's days. It's under 8 days these kids are recruited. And it starts, you know, remember, you got to look at the environment and that's what sped it up. Okay. Our kids are lonely. They don't have their friends. They're not having the social connection that we need as human beings to develop. Okay.
Right.
So they're stuck at home or it's like school home. Maybe no sports for this person. Maybe there's no one at home. They get their homework done and they're bored, right? They're bored. You know, we've got a great dopamine bump right here on every single social media app and every video game. It's a great dopamine bump. So they hop online.
Which means that it feels good to get notification. It feels good to make the connections.
Yeah. Every adult has it too.
Yeah.
Right. We are all addicted to the likes, loves, shares, whatever that is. Everyone wants to be wanted. Everyone wants to be loved and appreciated. And this is one simple way to get that little feel good.
Yeah. And I think in terms of how we humans are tribal in nature.
Yes.
And we so crave the being seen and accepted. Mm-hmm. And what's happened over the last 2 years is we've had less of the in-person tribalism. So the social media apps are kind of filling in the void. Yeah, but you're saying there's a lot more danger in that.
There is. Well, and look, there's a front side of the hand and back side of the hand of everything, right? The front side of the hand is social media actually allows us to be more connected than ever before. The back side of the hand is it isn't mostly, not all, mostly isn't true connection.
Right.
So it can go ahead.
And you know, that's really evident to me. Like if I post an opinion on Facebook in a way, or even post something that suggests an opinion that I may or may not have, seeing some of the awful, awful comments from people I thought were friends, you know, or colleagues in a sense, it's been shocking to me. And it's like, okay, well, you know, that really illuminates the truth of those connections.
It really does. And I share with people, I go right now, you know, there's a great line in Hamilton where a powder keg about to explode. Everybody is an upset waiting to happen. And mostly we can't put our finger on what we're upset about, right? But if we pause for a moment and look, we'll find something, right? And it's that moment when someone cuts us off or someone says something that we just blow whatever that is out of proportion because we're so upset about something. And it's a variety of things for, you know, we've got billions of people on the planet, right? So that kind of sets the tone, and you go back to the grooming and recruitment. It starts off really simple. So they send out all these DMs, and all it takes is one little girl who either just had a fight with her boyfriend, maybe broke up, just had a fight with her mom, maybe got a bad grade instead of a B, got a C. You know, remember when we were kids, it was devastating to get a grade that we didn't think we deserved, and then we make stuff up about it. And so we hop online, right? And we get a DM from a cute kid, right? He's like, hey, you know, Christine, I see we both like this band, and I see we both like this, and I saw you were at the beach over the weekend. My name's Johnny. You know, I'd love to connect. Now you got to look at the scenario before, right? I'm upset. Yeah. I'm lonely. I'm bored. And oh, by the way, lack of prefrontal cortex, you know, control.
Right.
Right. And I'm but I vaguely remember, here's the thing. I vaguely remember somebody telling me, don't accept every DM. So you're like, okay, let me go out and look at his Instagram page and see. Okay. So I go out there and maybe it looks normal. Maybe he's got a couple hundred friends, maybe one or two friends that are mutual. And, you know, he goes to the beach and he's cute. Maybe he plays soccer and he's at a, you know, concert of a band we both like, whatever that is. And I'm like, okay, this kid looks pretty normal. You know, he's going to school. He does some of the stuff I do and he's really cute and I'm lonely and I'm afraid and I miss my friends and all those emotions that we're dealing with as human beings. And so you say, great, nice to meet you, Johnny 123. And so you start to dialogue and it will be intense because you have to really grasp as a grown-up. Here's the thing. This is this person's job, is to spend all day and all night interacting with teenagers. And I'm back to the grown-up and the teenager. Okay, if we all went to US Open, Christine, are you a professional tennis player? No, me neither. So if we went to the US Open and Serena Williams called you down and said, Christine, come on, let's play a game, who would win?
Serena Williams.
Right? It's the same thing online with these predators, middle-aged adult, men and women, right? It's not just men, teenage brain. Okay. So now this person starts to interact with them very intensely over time, such that within 2 or 3 days, you're pouring your heart out to this guy. I miss my mom. She works too much. Maybe my dad's traveling, or he's in the military, or maybe he's not there. You know, my best friend hurt my feelings. I should have gotten a better grade. Like, you just start to pour your heart out to this person, and they're empathetic and they listen. And they're like, oh my gosh, I understand. And you feel so connected to this person that by the fifth or sixth day, he says, I really like you. And you're like, a cute boy likes me, right? Mm-hmm. Even after I've aired all my dirty laundry, which, by the way, you've now built an arsenal for him to manipulate you and coerce you, by the way.
Right, yeah.
Right? So, you know, I really like you. And he sends a picture of, you know, his chest with his shirt off. No face, just his chest. Now it's your turn, Christine. You send me a picture. Now remember, you're starting to feel feelings for this person. He already sent you a picture. So maybe you send a picture with, you know, a little off shoulder and a tilt back smile, but you show your face, okay?
Right.
And he's like, oh my God, you're so beautiful. You're so stunning. Show me more. And then he continues to build that rapport. So maybe you're on day seven, you're now exchanging inappropriate pictures. Okay. Now The pictures he's sending you aren't him, because he's a middle-aged guy using the same picture he's sending out to all these young girls and boys.
Right.
But he's got your picture with your face. By day seven or eight, hey, Christine, come out and meet me. I'm falling in love with you. I love who you are. I love everything about you. Meet me at the park. Now, at this point in time, maybe you're like, I don't know, right? I've already shared a lot. I'm not sure I'm ready to do that. So maybe you say, no, I'm okay. I want to keep this, you know, on the down low for a little while. And then he starts to threaten you, because remember, he has all those pictures. Mm-hmm. If you don't X, I'm going to share those pictures with all of your friend group, because he's on all of your social media. Okay. Mm-hmm. Or maybe you do go out and meet him. There's a little girl here in Apopka, Florida, 3 years ago, 11 years old, was groomed and recruited over 8 days on Instagram by a 26-year-old out of Georgia. He drove down. She got in the car willingly. This was her boyfriend. In her mind and in her heart, this was her boyfriend. Luckily, they got her before they crossed state lines and they brought her home safely. Okay. Uh-huh. It's not always that story. And then on the same side, right, maybe you decide you're done. You're like, this is now getting uncomfortable for me. I'm not going to meet you and I'm not sending you any more pictures. Mm-hmm. And he says, fine, not a problem. I'll miss you. Right. So in your mind, you think it's done. Well, 2 years later, you're now in high school. You walk in the door and your friends go, Christine, is this you? Mm-hmm. And it's all those pictures of you strung together as a pornographic video on a social media platform. You thought you were done. And now you've got children that have, and when I say they knew better, like, it's in the background, because everyone, air quotes, is doing this. Everyone's sending inappropriate pictures. How can it be so harmful?
Right.
That's how it can be harmful. So it's slow and intentional, but very intense over time. And they know exactly what to say because we put our whole lives on social media. So they know what's important to us. They know who's important to us. So they'll use threaten. They'll threaten you. They'll be like, Christine, if you don't, look, I know where you live. I'm going to come hurt your dog. Right? I see you walk home every day. I know who your friends are.
Right.
Do you want them to be hurt? So now you have this 14-year-old brain that's being bombarded with fear, upset, worry, concern. And on the other side, there's the shame and guilt, because how, you know, your parents are going to be disappointed. You'll be horrified if your friends at school see these pictures. Mm-hmm. And these predators know it, and they do it every single day. Now, the good news, right now I was like, oh, they're all hearts hurt. The good news, this can actually be prevented, Christine.
Okay, so, but let's go a little further. So how do they lure them into child trafficking? So, I understand that the grooming process and the threats and all that, but
so
for
let's,
many
so
children,
let's say,
it goes beyond that.
Great, let's say you get into that car and he still is your boyfriend. He still romances you, okay? Uh-huh. And maybe that takes, and maybe more than likely, he asks you to become intimate with him. Mm-hmm. So there you are, 13, 14 year old girl, and you're now having sex with an adult male, which, by the way, is illegal in most states.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. And you don't know, but he's taken pictures. Or he, you're so beautiful. You're so, let me take some pictures of you on the bed. Let me take some pictures of you, right? Which he'll in turn use to post online and start selling you. And remember, you've got all those hormones of not only youth, but the euphoria of love and the euphoria of intimacy and euphoria of sex and connection. And he says, hey, baby, I need you to do something for me, or I'm going to a party on Friday. Will you come with me? Mm-hmm. Sure. You're going to go. You tell your parents, I'm going over to Sally's for, you know, whatever, and I'm going to go. And what you don't know, Christine, is he's actually taking you to a party where you're going to be sold and passed around. You're going to be drugged probably first, because no child would willingly choose to be raped multiple times a night.
Right.
So you go to the party, you're all dressed up, you're with him, you think it's a great time, right? And he hands you a drink, and then you wake up the next morning and you don't remember a thing, but pictures start to show up on your phone. You looked great, baby, last night. You helped make me some money, right? Or you look great, baby. Let's do that again next weekend. Now you're mortified as a child, right? My parents can't know about it. He said they'd hurt my parents. He said they'd hurt my friends. So now I start to lead this double secret life. And sometimes they don't come home. Sometimes the drug addiction, the sex addiction, they stay away and they stay with their boyfriend and they become part of a trafficking ring where you're bought and sold every single night to multiple men. Oh. And you're hooked on drugs because our brain's not wired to take that kind of personal trauma every single day over and over again. Yeah. Now, if you're lucky, right, you've got some great, 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 great organizations there in Seattle. If you're lucky and you're done with that, you go find an organization that's going to help you get out, help you get clean, and help you to restore your life.
Yeah. And it's still terrifying because they have ways of tracking you. And
absolutely.
So you've talked a lot about girls. Does this happen to boys as well?
Absolutely. The national average, and, you know, I was going to talk about statistics, which I'll talk now. Most victims don't know they're victims. And if they're confronted on the street with police or something happens and they'll say, do you know? You're like, no, that's my boyfriend. So the stats, the best statistics I can use and that I like are generally from the Polaris hotline, because it's actual phone calls of people calling, whether it's calling a something in or it's a survivor calling in, or the National Center on Missing and Exploited Children. Because, and if your child goes missing, or there's online child sexual abuse material, you can report it to them, okay? So those are the stats I generally use. And what we've understood from both our Florida Department of Children's and Health and other states that I work with, it's in the 30% range.
Wow, it's pretty high.
And how they get the boys, and when we're out talking to kids, and I'm like, okay, how many gamers do I have in here? You know, and all the boys will raise their hand. I'm like, how many of you use Discord? Most of them will raise their hand. It's a mobile app where you can actually continue the chat after you play your video game. It's designed pretty much for video gamers, Discord is. And I said, great. I said, have any of you ever been asked for a picture and someone will help you level up by giving you tokens for that game? Now, they don't raise their hand, but I can see it on their faces. I go, yeah, that's the beginning of grooming of boys on video games.
Wow. And when you said they don't raise their hands, that does bring up something.
Because I think they're embarrassed.
There's more shame associated with the potential for, you know, for boys being abused.
Very much so. A really good girlfriend of mine, Dr. Tina Palfrey, she wrote a great book called Men, and then she has a little ampersand two up in the middle, Men Two. And she did some great research about male sexual abuse survivors. And what keeps them quiet is the guilt and the shame, in particular the shame, because how their body reacts. You know, our bodies are just, it's literally a machine. It reacts how it reacts. And there's not, you know, I don't control what enzymes my stomach uses to digest food. Okay.
Sure.
Same thing. So all these little boys that they're actually what's happening to them physically feels good, but mentally they know it's not right. And so they think because their body's reacting how bodies react, oh, I must like this, so it must be my fault.
Right.
You know, and then the predators, the pedophiles will use the same terminology. Well, if you didn't like it, you wouldn't have fill in the blank.
Right.
So it's a very coercive relationship, because the guilt and the shame and embarrassment on the side of the victim keeps them quiet, and the threats and the manipulation keep the pedophile or the trafficker or the predator, you know, that balance of power keeps them in control of that person.
Mm-hmm. Can we talk about Hollywood for a minute? Because from the things that I have read and heard, there are issues in Hollywood with this very problem. And when you think in terms of all the child actors, it sounds to me like a potentially dangerous situation.
So I think probably the most vocal person on this has been Corey Feldman. Uh-huh. He's, you know, and he's not shy about it, and he's talked about it, but you'll also know he hasn't come fully out with the film and the thing he said he was going to do because of back to here, guilt, threat, and manipulation.
Okay. Right.
You know, if you were raised in that environment and you know, you love your parents, you love your friends, and they say, if you tell anybody, I am literally going to kill your family.
Right.
You're not going to come out and say anything. You're just not. And
for people who aren't aware, can you just share briefly Corey Feldman's claims?
I don't know details about them. I'm going to invite your listeners and viewers to go do some of that research on DuckDuckGo.
Uh-huh. Yes. That's
Firefox.
A really important thing. Yeah.
Yes. DuckDuckGo. Not on Google. Don't look for this on Google. Look for it on DuckDuckGo or and you're using Firefox as your browser. But the loose part of it, right? Because I don't want to speak out of term, is both he and Corey Haim were both sexually abused as they were growing up in the film industry.
Yeah.
That's the claim. And he's very clear that his best friend, you know, committed suicide because of that. And that's part of the challenge here is I don't know if you were familiar with this statistic, but the last 2 years, teenage self-harm and teenage suicide is up almost 50%.
Wow.
50%. You know, and part of that's because of the environment. Part of that's because they're not having the social interaction.
Yeah.
There's a great story about a girl out of Canada. I cannot remember her name to save my life right now. But she was doxxed and enticed and online. And she actually did a video about it. She attempted suicide several times. And I'm going to say, finally, she succeeded and she ended up killing herself because of the guilt and the shame of taking one picture and sending it to a boyfriend, in air quotes, who in turn shared it with the school, who in turn, they all shamed her. And she even moved to different schools, and then they found out about it. She couldn't get away from it. And that's the thing that we talk to our kids about, is the moment you take a picture and you send it someplace, you can't get that picture back.
Right.
Ever, 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 even on Snapchat. That stuff stays on there. So, you know, the environment, and you know, and I'm gonna point to Weinstein. You know, there were women that came out that say he'd been sexually assaulting them for over 20 years, right? And that came, Weinstein, the Me Too movement was pretty big in what, 2018? 2017, 2018, right in that time frame. So if you go back 20 years, right, it's a long time.
It is a long time.
It wasn't new. And there's story after story after story of Hollywood starlets saying, if you didn't get on the director's couch, you didn't get the part.
Yeah. And there were even jokes made about it. Mm-hmm. People knew.
Oh,
lots
yeah.
of people knew, and nobody did anything.
No, and you know, and the it's back to the human condition that you and I pointed to. we all want to be admired. We all want to be part of a group or a club or something. We all want to be, you know, tribal. We all want to be part of something. And if you have a desire to be adored like that, like movie stars are adored, like, you know, the paparazzi and all of that, sometimes people hand up their soul to have that dream that they think is going to make them happy to happen. And then when they have that dream happen and they realize it doesn't fulfill in here, well, what are you going to do? You know, there's a reason why back in the 50s and 60s, all those starlets were, you know, on not only drugs, but alcohol, right? Yeah. They did both. And, you know, my mom was a occupational therapist in Phoenix, and she worked on the drug and alcohol unit. And I'm not going to say the names of many of the Hollywood actors and actresses that went through that drug and alcohol ward that my mom helped, but it was a lot. And most of them, it was because they, you know, whatever happened, you know, it, your conscience, your soul, your gut, all of that kind of knows when stuff is off. And it's, if someone has to be willing to ask the question, am I willing to do that? And if you look at a lot of the actors that have left Hollywood, Mel Gibson, right? He was clear about it. He's very vocal about it. He actually has a thing on YouTube about it. So, you know, you've got actors like that, that, you know, were in it. They loved it. They got in. It was like, ooh, I'm a no to that, and backed right out. And, you know, either went to another independent film environment. The kid that was in Pearl Harbor, I think he was only in two movies. Pearl Harbor was one of Josh Harnett, I think it was. And he was evident he was going to be a great actor. And who knows what happened? He chose another path. You know,
very
so you've got to look at it. You just got to watch the patterns and then start being in the inquiry and asking your own questions. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing when we go in and we train our young people. I am a huge fan of the Socratic method of education. I ask great questions. I have them do the thinking. I want people to love do that. The thinking. I want people to do the looking. And I just want people to start putting the dots together and coming up with their own conclusion. And then creating a powerful set of actions based on their conclusion, based on what works for them, not what mob rule says is right or wrong. Make up your own mind.
So I know that you're heavily into prevention, which is so important.
Yes.
But there's this whole other side of people who have been victimized, who may be suicidal or maybe stuck in this in this type of ownership, so to speak. How do we help those people?
So I in the environment, you know, it's interesting because you talk to them, it's they don't want to be called victims, right? And I appreciate and I honor that. They're human beings being suppressed and manipulated, quite frankly, against what they know better. But they don't know better, if that makes sense, right? Because it is, we've all done stuff and then justified what we've done to make ourselves feel better and not deal with the reality of what we've done, right? Yeah. It's human nature. And so the most effective recoveries are when survivors are done with that life and they become warriors, right? And because remember, most people in the life don't consider themselves victims. They believe it's their choice. And mostly that's my boyfriend. Okay. And, and sometimes they don't ever leave, right? Sometimes they're done. They're done with the abuse. They're done with the threats. They're done with the beatings. They're done with all of that. I spoke at a community college here several years ago, and I showed my film, my award-winning film, Trapped in a Trade, and that's what we use for all of our trainings. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the film, she came in kind of towards the end of the conversation, but she got the gist of it. And she's about 7 months pregnant. And she asked some really good questions. And in the back of my mind, I'm like, okay, this isn't new to you, right? This is not shocking to you. And so she came up afterwards. She's like, hey, can we, you know, sit down and talk? I'm like, yeah. So I, you know, bought her some lunch and we were talking, and she was very grateful. She said, Jan, thank you so much for coming and having this conversation. It's important that people understand this. I'm like, well, of course, you're welcome. I, you know, just kind of handed it to me by the Most High, and I'm going to do what I'm told to do, which is easier sometimes. Yeah. And And she looked at me square in the face and said, I just left the life. Now she couldn't have been more than 18. And the when people share those kinds of things with you, you just, this is like, gotta be your face. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, do you want to tell me about it? Right? No tonal inflection, no facial, not like, none of that. Can't do that.
Right.
And she's like, yeah. She was 16, living in the Dominican Republic, moved here. Her mother abandoned her, moved here, lived with her father. Her father worked all the time. And she thought, well, you know what? In order to spend more time with my dad, which is why I moved here, how about I get a job? Well, she started looking in the paper for a job and found a waitress job. She went in, it was a strip club. They hired her. She was 16, hired her. Wow. You know, a couple months in, the owner said, you know, you can make a lot more money dancing. You know, again, her whole purpose was dancing. Remember, prefrontal cortex. Okay.
Yeah.
Mother abandoned her. She's trying to help out her dad. So you have to take the context into all of this because it's really easy for people to judge. And she said, so, you know, I started dancing and this really good looking guy comes in, you know, sharp suit, the whole thing, and said, do you want to make more money than that? She's like, sure, I guess. Start pimping her out. She got pregnant. And I said, I'm just listening, right? And I'm right? like, okay. And I said, what had you leave? And she said, the second time he held a gun to my head. And I thought, okay, yep, that'd probably do it for me. And she said, I made the choice. I didn't want to raise my son in that environment anymore. Mm-hmm. So she left.
Good for her.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's when something happens and you have no idea what that thing is. There was a woman who was in a domestic violence environment and, you know, she'd gone into it, you think of the bone, it's probably been broken in this woman. And she finally left, came to the shelter, and the shelter asked her after a while, said, you know, what finally had you make that, you know, what altered it? And she said, he spit at me. All the broken bones didn't matter, but this person spitting at her was the straw that broke the camel's back for her, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. So you have no idea. It can be something, and I'm not going to say simple, but spitting is definitely less intense than a gun pointed at your head.
Sure.
And so there's a journey that they take when they choose, right? A lot of times too, because they're on drugs, because your mind can't handle that continual trauma.
Right.
They're handed drugs. And the first question is generally, who's going to get me my cigarettes and who's going to get me my drugs? Because they know what it's like to be, you know, taken up to the point of DTs. They know, because that's how the predators and the pimps will control them. Is I'll take you right up. First, I'll get you hooked on it. And then I'm going to take mm-hmm. you right up to DTs and go, if you don't perform tonight, you're not going to get your drugs. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's that manipulation and use of threats all the way through, and the continual demeaning of that human being. No one would love you. You're worthless. All mm-hmm. of those demeaning kind of conversations. So now I'm hooked on drugs. I'm clearly worthless because this person that I love keeps telling me that.
Right.
And whether I came from a good home or not, and that's the thing about human trafficking and online exploitation, it knows no socioeconomic, demographic, or geographic boundary. It can happen in right downtown Seattle or right out by, you know, our friends that create technology. It can happen anywhere because you don't have to leave your house. People can use this thing right here to get you.
So can we talk a little bit about Epstein Island and the fact that, we know a fair amount and yet we don't, because really we don't know much about who the perpetrators were. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that we're ever going to know, but what's this whole situation has made clear is that there's a whole lot of money at the elite level, bringing people in from all sorts of industries. It's not just like, you know, some slimy guy who's driving down a bad section of town looking for a prostitute. We're talking the so-called VIPs in our world mm-hmm. accessing this.
Yeah. And what I tell people is it goes so far, so wide, so deep, so high, your mind can't even be with it. And they published the logs on his plane. And if you look at who's been on his plane and been there, it's shocking.
It's really shocking. And not only just like once, some of them many, many times.
Yeah. Yes. Although some of it's not, right?
Uh-huh. Right.
You can look at the list and go, well, all right, I could get that. Right. And there's other people on there, you're thinking, no way. Like, no way. Uh-huh. No way. And see, and that's the thing. That's why it's called a hidden crime. Is it literally is hidden in plain sight, much like child abuse, much like domestic violence. We don't talk about it. We don't go to work and go, yeah, my husband smacked me today. We don't do that. We don't go, yeah, I took a nude and I sent it to this guy I don't really know. And now I'm kind of upset. We don't, as human, we don't do that. So no way would people know. Now, the question I would love to ask the judge and the prosecution, Maxwell's convicted of human trafficking. Mm-hmm. Who'd she sell the kids to?
No kidding. It's shocking to me. And it, to me, it smacks of, her taking the fall. And yes, she should, but those people who are paying money for it, mm-hmm. they should too.
Well, I don't know if you heard, but Prince Andrew's been stripped of all of his titles and all of that. So yes. That, you know what, that's one of those, okay, we're getting there. That's one. Uh-huh. That's one right. That's suffering some level of consequence, and they're not throwing out the case. So, and here's the thing too, it's interesting because, you know, we work with survivor warriors from all over the country. Because mm-hmm. when we go into schools and we have conversations or we do parent tech talks, I think it's very important to have, actually key, the most important, quite frankly, to have as lived experience experts share their experience, in particular with young people, because it's easy for it. You know, you, if you look at Grand Theft Auto, you get points for raping someone.
Okay? Oh,
yeah. So, you know, so it's easy. It's really easy for kids not to think it's real because they're playing a video game. Okay. Mm-hmm. So there are people in my life that I know that experienced that from that man. And this woman groomed these girls over time, made false mm-hmm. promises. And when they showed up to, you know, whether it was at Epstein's house in New York or wherever they were taken, mm-hmm. what was promised was never delivered. And they were sure. instantly taken advantage of. And Peter mm-hmm. Nygaard, most people don't even know who that guy is. There's a really great documentary about him on Discovery Plus called Unseemingly. Peter Nygaard's been trafficking girls since 1974. He makes Epstein look like a kindergartner in this realm. Wow. He too had a place on the Bahamas. And to read what these people have done to these children, it's the stuff that nightmares are made up of.
Yeah.
And the fact that, you know, people were in on it. People were in on the take, all for money. It just, it has me wonder, where has our sense of, I'm just going to say humanity. I'm not even going to go down the moral ground. Okay. Yeah. But our yeah. sense of humanity, that's another human being. It's not a bottle of water.
Right.
And that's where I really wonder, because I love the title of your show, the Transformation Talk Radio Show.
It's actually the network. That's the network I'm on. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I wonder where that transformation that we can make that difference for people just to pause. And that's what I share with the kids. I said, look, I just want you to pause before you take an action. Just pause mm-hmm. for a moment and think about, what kind of impact is this going to have on my life tomorrow, a year from now, 5 years from now? And if you mm-hmm. can look at that action you're about to take and go, nothing. I will never, it'll never affect me. Great. Go uh-huh. do that.
Right.
Go for a run. Go eat that salad.
Right? Yeah.
But if you're about to take an inappropriate picture and you're going to send it to someone you think you know, you're never going to get that picture back. It could end up anywhere on the internet. That's continual trauma for you. And oh, by the way, businesses, colleges, professional mm-hmm. athletic associations all go troll your social media.
Right.
So
we're running out of time. I want to make sure, Jan, that people know how they can connect with your organization.
Absolutely.
And how they can contribute.
Absolutely. What's your website? Thank you. Thank you. So our website is, before I go there, I want everybody to, whether they're, if you're in the car, it's okay. Play it back, have someone type this out or voice
text. And you can go to my Christine F. Church YouTube channel later on and get this, but let's do this quickly because we're running out of time.
Yep. Hotline number 888-3737-888. Everybody put that in your phone. Our website is pavingthewayfoundation.org. There's a donation button right on the front, and you can help us go out and educate young people about this horrific crime so they can be empowered, so we can prevent them from experiencing that kind of future. And you can follow us on social media. All of our handles are at PavingW.
Great. Thank you, Jan, for what you're doing and for joining us here today.
Absolutely. Thank you, Christine. I truly appreciate being on and having this conversation with you and your listeners.
Thanks so much for tuning in today. If you'd like to empower yourself to step further into your vibration of change, please visit my website at christineupchurch.com, where you can learn more about my insights, upcoming events, and private sessions.